A new Star Wars journey begins in the place all good journeys begin. At, well, the beginning. This Star Wars Day, I'm excited to introduce the new Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, where we will piece together the complete story of that galaxy far, far away, in timeline order, from the dawn of the Jedi through the great unknown following the sequel trilogy. This is a podcast for both Star Wars superfans and complete newbies. Listen to the short intro episode now to hear how it works and what to expect over the coming weeks as we set the stage for the new television series The Acolyte, which we will be covering with weekly breakdowns. Subscribe to the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast wherever you listen to take part in one of the most epic and expansive stories ever told, following all the twists and turns from start to finish. May the Fourth be with you all month and beyond.
Hello and welcome to the Radioactive Ramblings podcast. On today's episode, we are going to be covering Amazon Prime Video's Invincible. I'm one of your co-hosts, Aaron.
And I am your other co-host, Chase. Today we're going to be covering episodes 1 through 4 of season 2 of Invincible. And since Invincible has been out for quite a while now, we're going to do a 2-episode review of just season 2. And this being the first of those 2 episodes. There will be no spoiler-free section for these 2 episodes. So if you've not watched the second season of Invincible through episode 4, now is the time to tune out.
How do we want to handle spoilers for the second half of season 2? I would imagine that we're not going to get into it too much, but we might allude to a couple of things, right?
I think we're just gonna, try to avoid them, right?
Okay. Yeah. That sounds good to me. All right. Do you want to take us away with episode 1? Getting right into it this time.
Yeah. So, episode 1 of season 2 is... It starts out with Mark fighting the Immortal. And Mark says to the Immortal that he's trying to save lives, and he's pleading with the Immortal, "Why won't you listen to him?" But the Immortal says he can't trust him, especially after what he and his father have done. And then out of nowhere, Omni-Man comes in and helps Mark kill the Immortal.
Yeah, all of this, funky timeline stuff that they were doing this season. At first, I was a little on the fence about it. When they were showing the alternate universes, I was kind of like, okay, the multiverse thing, we've been getting this with Marvel, we've been getting it other places. And I know that when you and I were talking about this season as it was coming out, you were telling me that this is a thing in the comics, right? The multiverse?
Yes.
And even though at first I was a little like, oh, another multiverse, great. The more they go on in this season and use it in creative and interesting ways, I really enjoyed it. I wasn't expecting to like it as much as I did.
And then the next scene in this episode is we see in the same universe that they're showing where Mark and Omni-Man kill the Immortal, they pan over to a ruined city where Mark's voice is playing on loop throughout the city. And it's basically him saying that after they've conquered Earth, it's going to be part of the Viltrumite Empire. Yeah, we get a little glimpse into this universe where it's Mark took sides with Omni-Man instead of with humanity and his mother.
Yeah, it's a very grim reality. It's very desolate. The world looks very destroyed. I don't know how much is left for the Viltrumite Empire to be ruling over in this one.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even know what would they... I mean, I guess because of... Actually, that's kind of... I'll talk about that later. But yeah, then we see the remnants of the Guardians of this universe and Engstrom. Engstrom retrieves something called Null Energy that Robot was asking for. But before anything can happen with that, Mark and Nolan find them and basically kill everyone, except Angstrom escapes through a portal.
And I think that's the first time we see Angstrom using the little, like, teleportation portal multiverse power, right?
Yeah, but I don't think it's his. I think it's a different Angstrom that pulled him in. Like, the one that wanted to, like, fuse all their consciousnesses.
That Angstrom gets basically kidnapped from his timeline.
Yeah.
To go be a part of this other thing.
And then we cut back to the main universe of Invincible, where we see Mark tirelessly trying to go out and save as many people as he can at all times. And basically being depressed and feeling like no matter how much he does and how many people he saves, he can't ever atone for all the people that he feels he let down in the Chicago incident and died there. And he's like depressed, reflecting on those things and his father.
Yeah, I mean, when we left him at the end of season one, Mark was quite literally beaten down, like physically by his father, but also just emotionally. He had his whole world ripped away from him. He found out that the person he idolized most in the world was, I don't want to say a fraud, but I guess essentially, yeah, a fraud, where he just, his whole world was ripped away from him. So you can understand why he's feeling that way. You got to feel for Mark here, where even though it's not his fault, everything that happened is not on him. He definitely sees it that way. And I guess that's kind of the mark of a good hero in a lot of media.
Yeah, you can, I mean, throughout, it's a very prominent theme throughout the season, I feel like, is Mark trying to deny the fact that he's like his father, and also shouldering the blame for things that aren't necessarily really his fault. Like,
yeah,
he tries to take responsibility for a lot of the deaths, even though, like, he did his best. He did what he could. He stood against his father, you know? And doing so brought him to the verge of death. But yeah, he still did it.
Yeah, I mean, if he had done nothing, which was essentially the only other option he had, was to either join his father or oppose him, so many more people would have died. And I know that he feels like he's in this spot where he thinks he could have done more. But, I mean, just looking back at that season one finale, I don't think there was anything else he could have done. He did everything that he possibly could have and saved as many people as he could have in that or in that moment.
I mean, yeah. Also, like, think about it. Like, he's barely had his powers at this point. The gap in strength between him and his father. I mean, we see it in the fight where his father's, like, just, like, literally, like, fucking clapping his cheeks, like, easy. Like, he's just fucking beaten down on him, like, easily.
And aside from the fact that there's this difference in physical strength between the two of them, Mark is still a teenager. I mean, at the end of season one, he was, what, 17, 18 years old? And
yeah, end of season one, I think he's going into his senior year of high school.
Yeah, and we see him, like, starting college in this season. So he's still very young. He doesn't have the sort of emotional tools to deal with everything that's happening to him. I mean, for anyone, this would be traumatic, but especially for someone young like Mark, who is just going to struggle a little bit more with it. Yeah, there's just a lot going on here for poor Mark, not to even get into his relationship drama yet.
But then we cut back to Angstrom, but this is a different, I believe this is Mark's universe's Angstrom, the one with the portal powers, where he recruits the Maulers for help in order to basically create, or not create a machine, because he's basically already created the machine, but help him finish this machine that will fuse all of the universes, like all of the multiverses, Angstrom's minds into one.
It sounds like an evil genius plan type of thing. But then you get to know Angstrom a little bit more and you're like, oh, this guy's motives are pretty pure.
Yeah.
You would expect this type of scheme to be coming from, like the Mahler twins, but
yeah. Well, I mean, like, he literally is like, you're the only people that could help me do this, and in doing so, I will give you a universe that of your choosing as long as you don't, like, hurt anyone. So, like, I mean, that's a pretty good deal for both of them, I would say.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I love when the Mahler twins show back. I just love when they do those little callbacks to the earlier episodes or earlier seasons. They're always so funny, especially with the Mahler twins. They're always getting the short end of the stick in these episodes.
I feel like the Mahler twins are, like, made out to be more villainous than they actually are.
I agree with that. They're not that evil. They're definitely selfish. I don't know if I would call them, like, downright evil, though.
Yeah. And then we cut back to Mark, where he feels he is to blame for the Chicago massacre. Again, going back to, I think, what we said, it's just Mark just, he's so overwhelmed with so many emotions. He doesn't really know how to process them. He's so young. He just feels that, like, as someone with powers, he should have been able to stop it. But I think we know that he did his best. And then Mark confronts Cecil. He wants to get back in the field, but Cecil tells Mark he needs to take time for himself and really get into a better mental state before he can get back in the field under Cecil's command.
I'm going to go off on a quick tangent here. If you've been with us since our Fallout coverage, Cecil is voiced by Walton Goggins, who plays the ghoul in Fallout. So that's a fun little connection between these two Amazon shows.
Yes. And then from there, we see the Guardians struggling to fight this, like, giant monster thing that is, like, has the mental capacity of, like, an actual elementary schooler. And while they're fighting it, we see Robot gets caught in an attack almost. Luckily, the Guardians stop him from getting absolutely smushed by the giant, but Rudy is confused. He's like, why did I freeze up? And then Monster Girl's like, that's fear. Like, that's the first time you've ever felt fear in your life, because now Rudy's actually in the robot suit now instead of just remote piloting it.
Yeah, he's got to deal with actually being human and not just controlling the robot suit from afar, but actually being in the action, having his life in danger. And, you know, that comes with its pros and its cons. You're going to be in the line of fire, but you're also going to be able to be a lot more present than if you're just remote controlling it. So it's going to be an adjustment for Rudy to figure out how he can manage his humanity going forward.
I don't know why he didn't keep the suit remote, though.
I think that he is trying to be more connected with his teammates and also have, I don't know, I'm trying to think of a way to word this, have like a more present experience and not be so far removed from other people, you know?
I mean, true, but he could like do all the things that they do in like the Guardians like headquarters and all that shit while just remote controlling the robot when they're actually fighting. Like, I feel like he's just putting himself in danger when he doesn't have to.
I feel like there's got to be something more to that we're both forgetting right now. Like, there has to be more of a reason why he's in the suit for real instead of remote controlling it, right?
I don't know, maybe. I mean, maybe the way he was, like, remote controlling it earlier is that it was, like, drilled into his, like, brain or something.
You know what? I think that you're onto it. I seem to remember him being in some sort of capsule or something else where he couldn't move, and that's why he was remote controlling the suit, is because he was like stowed away, his physical body was stowed away somewhere.
Yeah, but our next scene is with Engstrom again trying to get the Maulers to fuse all the versions of him into one mind. They're setting up that machine. But yeah, then we go back to Debbie, who gets back to her house, and she's surprised by Olga, who's made her dinner, and they talk to each other about what it's like to lose a husband, and Olga doesn't resent Debbie. She knows it wasn't any of Debbie's fault what Omni-Man did. Olga was the wife of the Red Rush, from like the original Guardians. Yeah. So they kind of bond there. And then we cut back to the Guardians after their fight, and they're in the headquarters, and Cecil's there, and he instates the Immortal as their leader.
Rudy was not too happy about that one.
Yeah, I mean, he was disappointed, but he wasn't, like, angry over it, I wouldn't say. And then, but he also introduces Bulletproof to the team.
Yeah, I mean, Rudy, he expressed that he understood why the Immortal was put in as the leader of the Guardians instead of him. But yeah, he definitely, it might be for the best at this point in the story, given everything that's happening with Robot, where he's freezing up in battle, and he's just got a lot to figure out right now, and maybe leading isn't the best thing for him.
And then we see Eve and Mark chatting, but you can tell Mark is distant, and Mark discloses to Eve the fears he has of becoming his father. But Eve reassures him that he's not the same man as his father.
He's going to have a hard time getting over that fear. He's got the same powers as his father, albeit not as honed and not as powerful yet, but he's on that trajectory to become almost as powerful as his father. And I can see him being afraid of that, but at the end of the day, he was raised as a human, and that's sort of where his home is, whereas his father was sent to Earth with a mission to subjugate the entire planet. So it's a very different situation. Just because you have that kind of power doesn't necessarily mean that you are going to end up like that.
Yeah. And then we see Cecil calls in Mark to deal with whatever the Maulers are up to. But also in the scene, we see Donald, who we saw died in season one. He sacrificed himself to stop Nolan, or to buy them time. So that was a little crazy. Like, what? Donald's alive?
I know. When I saw that, I was like, did I remember him dying wrong? Like, did he survive that somehow? I was so confused.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. So Mark confronts all of the Maulers. We see him run into... There's like fucking 30 of them. He confronts them, and in this misunderstanding, because he thinks they're up to something evil, he tries to stop them, but the Maulers kick his ass because there's 30 of them, and they're like on the verge of killing him. But Angstrom says that he will not build his perfect world with like the blood of innocence or something like that, I believe, and like ruins the process to save Mark. Which causes like a huge explosion. And yeah, there's like, it looks as if all the Maulers and all the Angstroms are dead. Wrecks explode, and the Guardians kind of cheer Mark up, even though Mark is like, holy shit, a bunch of people just died for no reason. Mark gets home to his mom, who gives him his letter from college telling him whether he's gonna get in or not, and he meets up with Amber, and they both get into the same college together, so they're really happy about that. And then Mark's on like a walk at night, still beat up as hell, black eye, like cut lip, everything, and Immortal like creeps up on him. He's like floating in the darkness above Mark, and he's like I don't trust you, even if Cecil does, and flies off.
Imagine pulling up in the middle of the night, flying, and you're just this, like, 1,000-year-old man, and you're threatening an 18-year-old. That's crazy.
Yeah, well, Immortal's just a freak.
Immortal is a freak.
And then right before the end card, we see a Mauler survived, very mangled, and so did Angstrom. But Angstrom is like improperly fused with all of the Angstroms, and he becomes hateful and resentful towards Mark and blames Mark for the accident.
Yeah, Angstrom becomes Megamind and Mauler. Okay, so The first thing I thought of when I saw Mahler, like, all crisped up like that was that there's not going to be any more issues of which Mahler is the original. Because if he clones himself, obviously the clone isn't going to be, like, all burnt up and crispy. So that Mahler will always know that it's the original.
Yeah.
Let's get into episode two. So we see Mark's graduation from high school, but he's not there because he's off fighting Doc Seismic. And they're duking it out. There's some lava going around. But in the end, Mark ends up saving the day, defeating Doc Seismic, and making it back to his graduation just in time for the end. Then Mark and his friends go and visit Eve's place. Seems like she's living in a pretty swanky treehouse, and they celebrate their graduation. They talk about college and their hopes and dreams for the next few years, and it's a very nice scene, very calm, compared to how the last episode went. All right, so we cut back to one of the astronauts returning from Mars, but it turns out that it is a Martian disguised as an astronaut. So we're going to find out a little bit more about this guy as the season goes on, but he doesn't have any malicious intents. He's just chilling on his way back to Earth.
I remember as soon as I saw this scene, I was like, what happened to the actual astronaut then?
Yeah, I know. I think that gets answered in the second half of season two, which we had to wait a million years for. So we see Eve trying to help rebuild and beautify the city after everything that happened. And it at first appeared that she did a pretty great job, but later on we find out that it caused a ton of problems and her whole little thing. What was, didn't it kill a kid? Didn't it, the playground cave?
No one died, but it hurt. It like gravely injured some people.
So either way, not great. Eve is trying to do her best, but is struggling with her powers in a very similar way to how Mark is struggling with his powers, just kind of being afraid of your own strength and what you can do. Which takes us to the next part of the episode where we see Mark struggling to just enjoy his life and sort of give up a little bit of the responsibility of having powers to live somewhat of a normal life, but he just always ends up having to leave his girlfriend high and dry when they're on dates together, having to leave his mother when they're supposed to have dinner together, just ignoring the personal aspects of his life and running whenever the bat signal goes up to have him come save the day.
Yeah, in this scene, we see like Debbie trying to plan like a nice summer vacation for them after his graduation. And he's like, I can't take that time off. Like, I need to be ready.
I feel bad for Debbie. This whole season, Debbie is the unsung hero here. She might be the best written character in the show.
Yeah.
We see Rex is sick and tired of all the rough training that the Immortal is putting the new Guardians through. And then he catches the Immortal and Kate in the act. So this is how we find out that the Immortal and Kate are, I don't even know whether to call it a relationship or not, but they're involved with each other.
Well, Kate explains that what Rex and Kate had was like a hookup, but what mm-hmm. she and the Immortal has is like an actual relationship.
So Rex is pretty jealous of this whole situation, or not even jealous. He's just kind of pissy about it.
Yeah.
And so then we cut to the Martian eating his frozen pizza and enjoying the amenities of Earth. And we find Mark going into what city is it that he's gone into here?
I forget. It's like cut off from the rest of the world, I think, right? Like,
it reminds me of like Gotham in every single iteration. I think it's supposed to be Gotham.
I'm sure it is.
Mark runs into Darkwing and scares the shit out of him. And Mark, I believe, is questioning Darkwing, trying to get some information from him. And then we cut to Debbie wanting Cecil to allow Mark to just be a kid. And Debbie, just as the rest of the audience was, she's very surprised to see Donald. She's like, what the fuck? I thought you were dead. Like, staring at him. Obviously, they don't say anything about it yet.
Well, it's because, like, Cecil, like, hushes her up and, like, is like, it's time for you to go.
Yeah. Rushes her out the door so that she can't tip Donald off. And, you know, Cecil doesn't take very kindly to Debbie's request that he leave Mark alone a little bit. Cecil is not really in the mood to be letting anyone go light on the work for a little while. Cecil's trying to protect the world here. He can't be allowing people to take time off.
Yeah.
And then we cut to Eve with her parents, and we get a little bit more insight into the fact that her parents don't approve of her powers, or at least her use of her powers. And we get the sense that it's a lot more her father that doesn't approve of it than it is her mother, although neither of them are particularly supportive of the whole superhero gig. And I believe this is the scene where her father brings up the fact that all those people got injured.
No.
In the park that she tried.
No, it's later. It's in a different episode.
Oh, damn.
Or no, that's not in a different... It's later, though.
Okay, gotcha.
Yeah.
So Eve's parents just don't approve of her powers. She tries to help them with these powers and, you know, turning things into gold for them to use so that they can pay their bills, and they refuse to accept any help from her.
I think her dad says, like, some shit like, we're gonna, like, work and make money like every other normal person or something like that.
Yeah.
He's just, like, he's kind of an asshole, I'm not gonna lie.
He is very much an asshole.
Like, I understand where he's coming from, where he's like, he wants to, like, do an honest day's work, earn his money the right way, but at the same time, like, putting down your daughter for trying to, like, make a difference in a good way in the world is crazy.
Yeah, the guy is just, he's an asshole. There's no mincing words about that. So we see Mark trying to implement some of that work-life balance that he seems to be struggling with so much. He takes Amber on a date to the Eiffel Tower, and they're having a great time. They're chatting it up. Then, of course, he has to get called in by Cecil to go solve some sort of world-ending crisis. So Mark is then tasked with taking his father's sentence in Atlantis. Whew, that was a big jump. Wasn't the title of this episode, I Lose My Virginity to a Fish in a Few Hours or something like that?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, so Mark has to go deal with this whole Atlantis situation and ends up having to marry the widow of the king of Atlantis. That's his punishment that he has to take on for his father.
Or that's what he's told.
Yes, that's what he's told. And the Guardians go on and fight the Lizard League, and they meet Shapesmith, who... Shapesmith is the Martian who hitched a ride on the marine ship on his way back from Mars. So we see Shapesmith trying to be helpful and wanting to join the Guardians. Are you at all, or were you at all, curious as to whether or not the Shapesmith had ulterior motives when he was trying to join the Guardians, or did you know that he was pretty much just harmless?
I thought he was harmless because of that, like, one scene where he's, like, in the apartment and he's, like, admiring the previous Martian that was a Guardian. But, yeah. I still am like, what did he do to the astronaut, you know?
Yeah, you have to wonder, right? Like, what... He had to have done something bad to have gotten where he is. You know, you don't just leave Mars. So then Mark meets the Queen of Atlantis and is forced into fighting a trial by combat. I'm going to keep going with this storyline and then come back to Debbie later. So Mark fights this big Atlantean monster in a trial by combat. He struggles with it for a while, but of course ends up defeating the monster. Then we go over to Debbie, who is selling a house to someone, to a couple, or at least trying to sell a house. And she gets very angry because the husband is clearly controlling and abusive and an asshole. And that very understandably strikes a chord with Debbie. And she has to sort of restrain herself from going and screaming at this dude.
Yeah, this guy's just an actual... piece of shit. Like, I think he tells his wife, like, once you start making the money, you can decide, or some shit like that, which is crazy.
What a piece of shit. Definitely reminded her of Nolan a little bit with the comments that he made at the end of last season.
Yeah.
So after Mark defeats the Atlantean monster, we cut to Eve, and she is struggling with the use of her powers, and this is where her dad comes in and is just a complete asshole to her once again. I mean, Eve can't catch a break with her family. There's clearly just so much tension going on that that relationship is going to be hard to salvage, I think.
Yeah, it just seems like it's almost irreconcilable with her and her dad. Like, they just have such differing views on that.
Yeah, neither one of them are willing to budge on that whatsoever. And we get another look at Debbie, who is just absolutely filled with rage and sadness. You know, she has to deal with the fact that her husband has left them, is a monster, and didn't love her the way that she thought that he did. Not only that, but she has to watch her son struggle with the aftermath of that, and has to watch her son go off and do superhero things, which terrifies her. You know, there's just, Debbie is going through so much. She's struggling with so much, and she really is the most tragic figure in all of this, I think.
Especially with how much time she spent with him. She spent so many years of her life devoted to him, just to be tossed away.
Yeah, you're married to someone, and then you find out that you didn't know them. You were with them for like almost 20 years, and you were just being lied to the whole time. That's gotta do a number on you.
Yeah.
All right. We see Shapesmith getting welcomed into the Guardians, but we see that the real astronaut is being controlled by the Sequids, which are these little squid tentacle critters, little guys that have the mind control abilities, and they're creepy. I'm never a fan of little tentacle monsters that take over your brain. Those always freak me the hell out.
Yeah, just being mind controlled is scary.
Yeah, the idea of not being able to control your own thoughts and actions is just, it's a lot. So yeah, the Lizard League gets taken over, new management in town, and this guy has big plans for the Lizard League. He wants to take on a lot for them.
Episode 3. Mark moves into college with William, his best friend, as his roommate, and immediately gets exiled and then lays pipe with Amber.
You know, these two, they're really trying to make it work. Poor William getting sexiled on like the first night of college.
No. Mark gets exiled.
Oh, I forgot. He goes to Amber's room. William's
the one.
Yeah,
and she's like, my roommate's not moving in till tomorrow or something.
Yeah, well, that kind of works out for both of them then.
And then we get some Unopan lore and Alan the Alien lore. So Alan the Alien is a Unopan, and we learn about basically how the Viltrumites conquered them and how Alan was a one-of-a-kind experiment, but even still, he's not strong enough to defeat a Viltrumite.
Yeah, I mean, no matter what they do to Alan, he's gonna struggle with that.
Yeah.
He's the strongest among the Unopans, but still is no match for the Viltrumites.
Yeah, he's one of the strongest in the universe and still is nothing compared to a Viltrumite.
Which is crazy. Like, I mean, how can you even stand against the Viltrumites if the strongest people in the universe can't do shit against them?
Yeah. So we see Alan comes back from going around the universe testing planets again and tells the Coalition about Mark and how he thinks Mark is a hope for them to defeat the Viltrumites. And we see Thetis, basically the leader of the Coalition. He's like, this is interesting. This could be something that we explore. But he also pulls Alan aside and tells him that he thinks there is a rat in the Coalition that is leaking information to the Viltrumites. Yeah, so we see after that, Alan goes back to his basically apartment in the Coalition, and Alan has sex there with
a lot of sex in this season.
Yeah, there's the like narrator tries to cut away back to Mark, but he's still having sex with Amber. So there's just sex noises of Alan in the background until we see the next scene with Alan where he's in the dining hall with his girlfriend, presumably, and they're eating some food. But then out of nowhere, Alan gets attacked by Viltrumites right as he's telling his girlfriend about the rat. And the Viltrumites are interrogating him for info on Mark and Nolan, but which is also like alludes to the fact that there most definitely is a rat, because Alan literally just told the coalition about Mark.
Yeah, I mean, the moment that the leader Thetis was telling Alan about, you know, there's a mole somewhere, I thought it was Thetis immediately. I was like, it's got to be him. He seems a little suspicious to me.
I'll tell you right now, it's not him.
Mm-hmm.
But Thetis is an interesting character we'll learn more about. So Alan is getting his ass handed. He's quite literally getting killed out there. But he doesn't give up any info on Mark or Nolan. It's like a big fuck you middle finger to them as he's like getting killed. And we see what's left of Alan is on life support. And his partner is basically almost mourning him because it looks like he's gonna die.
Yeah.
And Thetis kind of like gets her out of the room, and it seems like he just kills Alan by turning off his life support.
Yeah. I was like, there's no way they're getting rid of Alan already. They can't get rid of Alan. I was a little pissed.
I know. I was like, dang, rip Alan. I mean, I've read the comics, so I know everything to come. But yeah, like, I guess when I was reading the comments and that happened, I was like, what the, dang, rip Alan.
Yeah.
But yeah, we cut back to the Guardians, and they're in the workout room. People are keeping their body in tip-top shape, and Kate tells Rex why she and Immortal have an actual bond. She brings up some points about how if you really counted how long all of her clones were alive, she'd probably be much closer to Immortal in age than other people. And also about how Immortal understands what it's like to die so many times.
Yeah. You know, Rex, I think Rex needs a reality check here. He needs to learn the error of his ways a little bit.
Yeah, he like accuses her of being a cheater, but it's like the irony, bro. Like, you're a fucking cheater, dude.
Yeah, the serial cheater at that.
Yeah. But yeah, and then we see Rudy talking to Monster Girl. He's trying to control his fear response by like mapping his brain waves and seeing like what ways he can like monitor that, and I don't even know. But and then he asks Monster Girl to go on a movie date with him, and she says yes.
I just don't know how to feel about the whole Monster Girl-Rudy plotline. I don't know that I care that much about their relationship, if I'm being so honest.
Yeah, in all honesty, even when I was reading the comics, I didn't really care for it. I also think it's really weird how he literally stole DNA from his teammate and cloned himself as a child so he could be like closer to her.
Yeah, it's pretty weird. I think it's kind of creepy, but you know, to each robot their
own. Is this Riz?
Own.
Is this Riz?
This is not Riz. This is the opposite of Riz. Rudy has zero Riz. Okay.
Hey, he got the movie date.
Fair enough.
All right, and then we see in the next scene Debbie's at like an AA meeting, but for people who are grieving their lost partners, and it's implied that all of the people there like their partners were like superheroes. But yeah, and then we cut away and it's Rudy and Monster Girl. They're eating burgers and fries together. Rudy's being a fucking weirdo, not understanding how a fast food restaurant works. He tries to call for a waiter, blah, blah, blah. It's kind of like a boring scene, in all honesty. But then we cut back to Debbie, who's at a bar with Theo, who's a man she met at the meeting, and they're having a drink together, but Theo's talking about how he lost his wife, the Green Ghost, and Debbie feels somewhat responsible almost and gets really emotional and tells Theo she has to use the bathroom. And then we cut away to Seance Dog. We cut away to Mark and William in the dorm room, and they hear a knock at the door, and William makes a joke about how Amber is ready for like round two or something and answers the door. And it's Seance Dog, which is like Mark's, like, it's like a superhero from a comic book Mark likes. And he's like floating in the doorway. and Mark is like, what the heck? And he takes him out into the room and then out the window and into like the forest next to their college. And it turns out it's not actually Seance Dog. It's a alien, bug-looking alien called a Thraxan from another planet who begs Mark for his help because there are meteor showers that are going to erase billions of their kind. And Mark agrees to go with him and tells Amber he's going to be gone for a few weeks. William volunteers to do as much for Mark's grades as he can, and Cecil tries to protest Mark's leaving, but Mark's like, sorry, I have to do this. There are so many lives at stake, and goes against Cecil's orders.
If I thought I was meeting Seance Dog and it turned out to be a phony, I'd be fucking pissed.
No, I thought that whole scene was really funny, I'm not gonna lie.
I thought it was great. When Seance Dog bursts in and William is staring at him like, what the fuck is happening?
When he hides in the blanket and he's like, yeah. It's actually for you, Mark.
William's got some good comedic timing.
No, yeah, when he like follows them out into the forest in his underwear. Yeah. And he's like, how are you going to turn him down?
How but could you say no to Seance Dog?
But yeah, and then we cut back to Debbie, where she basically reveals to Theo that her husband was Omni-Man, and then Theo is like, you're a horrible person, and runs off. Just crazy.
It is crazy.
And then we cut back to Mark, and he arrives on the Thraxan homeworld, and he's walking to basically meet whoever's in charge to discuss what he needs to do, and we don't even get to see him, but we hear Nolan or Omni-Man say, like, hello, son, or something like that, and then it cuts away.
I can't believe Seance Dog was an agent for Omni-Man.
Omni-Man's secret agent, Seance Dog.
All right. That was a really great end to episode 3. That one had me on the edge of my seat. I remember thinking to myself, God, I'm going to be so upset having to wait after episode 4 until the next half of this season comes out.
Yeah, and then they do the crummy thing with the second half of the season. Not only do they make us wait forever, they start putting ad rolls in them.
I know. Amazon putting in those ad rolls.
It's like, bro, I'm not getting to watch this show for free here. Like, I'm paying for Amazon Prime. Like, what the heck?
Literally. Yep. Well, you could be paying for Prime Video without the ads, too. But guess you're not doing that.
Guess you're too poor. Guess you're too poor to enjoy it without the ads, poor.
Take your free shipping.
No, what's crazy too is when I went back to do the outline for the show and I was like skimming the episodes, it took me so long because in the second season when they first put ad rolls, it was like one ad roll per episode and it was like 2 minutes. When I went back to skim, it was like 3 ad rolls per episode and they're each like a minimum of 3 minutes and I started like tweaking. I was like, how is this is like actually just television now?
Yeah, I remember watching the episodes for the first time and it would play one ad at the beginning and be like, this episode is brought to you by Audi, and then
no, it would play like one like fucking like 15 second ad that was like an ad for another Amazon Prime TV show, and I was like, whatever, it's 15 seconds, it's at the start, it's not interrupting it, I can deal with that, I don't care. But now it's like the first ad is like 6 minutes in and it's like 3 minutes long and it's like, what the heck? Like, let me watch the show.
Speaking of how annoying ads are, let's take a quick break.
Ha 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 ha.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
And we're back for episode 4. Now, we see a little flashback of Omni-Man, and he's just wandering the universe depressed. He's letting his beard grow out. He's sulking, flying through outer space. And then he's found by the Thraxans, and From what I understand...
There's the part where he's, like, about to kill himself in the black hole, and then he sees the Thraxan ship getting sucked into the black hole, and he saves them.
He gets a little bit of a new lease on life by the fact that he's saved someone again. I think that he misses a little bit. He misses being the hero from his time back on Earth, you know?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, we see later in this episode, even, like, he's feeling new feelings, you know, he's feeling empathy, he's confused by all of it.
Yeah, and I think he's even feeling grief for his family. I mean, even though they're still alive, he's still lost them. They're not his family anymore, essentially. So I think that he's struggling with the feeling of having to mourn his family, you know. He has probably never had a connection like that before.
Yeah, completely.
Mark, we find out that Mark still does love his dad, obviously. No matter what his dad could have done, there's always still going to be those memories from childhood. There's always going to be that feeling of love. And he definitely missed his dad, and Omni-Man definitely missed him too, you know. Then we find out about Nolan's new son, which he has had with a Thraxan queen. I don't think that they give this kid a name in this episode.
They explain later that Thraxans don't name their children. They let their children pick their names when they're older.
Yeah, so little bro does not have a name yet, and he looks a lot like Mark, but purple. So half bug, half Nolan.
Half bug, half Nolan.
Devi feels very, very lost and without purpose, and understandably still really angry with Nolan. And we talked about this a lot last episode of her dealing with this, so I won't belabor it too much, but she's going through a lot.
Yeah, I mean, she's a real tough cookie.
Yeah, I mean, without a doubt. I would say she's probably one of the toughest, if not the toughest character in this show, at the very least emotionally. Like, she's holding it together so much better than I would in that situation.
Yeah.
And then we see Mahler doing his classic thing of cloning himself. There's always got to be two. And...
but now that one of them is maimed, he's able to prove to the other clone that he's the clone, and basically makes the other, makes the clone the slave.
That never-ending argument of, I'm the original. No, I'm the original. It all ends here with Crispy Mahler.
Crispy Mahler.
We then cut to Donald, who finds his glasses from the rubble, from the explosion from last season. And this is where he really starts to question what's going on here. We already saw him start to sort of those gears turning in his head last episode, or the episode before, when Debbie sees him and is confused. He starts to wonder what's happening, and now he's starting to piece things together a little bit more.
And then we see Eve visit Amber and William at college, but she learns that Mark is not there and he's off planet helping some aliens. And William and Amber try to, like, invite her out to hang out, but it seems like they're kind of busy with, you know, college, trying to get through college, make new friends, but they do have a concrete brunch plan.
Sure hope nothing ruins those plans.
Yeah.
We learn a little bit more about how Mark feels about Omni-Man and his new family. Very understandably, Mark feels like Omni-Man has kind of replaced his family. He's got a new wife, new kid. The whole line at the end of last season about Omni-Man just being able to start over, do it all over again. I'm sure to Mark it feels like he has done that, essentially.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing is, though, I feel like you can clearly tell Omni-Man's different. He feels like, even like since the mask is off, he feels more emotional than like the Omni-Man we saw in the last season that was beating Mark to death and stuff. We can tell like he clearly asked Mark here for a reason, like whether it be that he misses his son and wants to see him, or he truly does actually need Mark's help.
Yeah.
He also kind of explains to Mark here, like, the real reason he actually asked him out here. And it's because he believes that soon the Viltrumites will actually track him down and kill all of the Thraxans and his son, because his son isn't, like, genetically pure enough as an actual Viltrumite. So he kind of begs Mark to help him protect his kid and the Thraxans.
Yeah, this was the first little glimpse that we got into the whole thing of the Viltrumites picking certain races to mate with above others. I don't think that we knew about that before, did we?
No, we didn't. In all honesty, at first when Nolan mentioned it, I was like, oh, so they're just, like, I think, like, when he first mentioned it, like, with Mark, where he was like, The Viltrumite DNA is so strong that you're, like, 99.9% Viltrumite. Like, I thought, like, literally they would just go around fucking every alien and, like, no matter what, they would just turn out basically Viltrumite. Yeah, as it turns out, that's not true. But, I mean, we kind of see that with when Nolan's Thraxon's son, where, like, his mother is like, oh, like, he's aging slower than a Thraxan because the Viltrumite DNA is so strong. But yeah, but we do see that, like, if you're not close enough genetically to a Viltrumite and don't look close enough to a Viltrumite, the Viltrumite Empire sees you as disgusting and unworthy of being alive, basically. But yeah, and basically as Mark is, like, on the verge of accepting to help Omni-Man, we see that the Viltrumites are there for Omni-Man on Thraxa.
Yeah, this was pretty crazy. I was sort of half expecting Nolan to dispatch them like they were nothing, you know? I got the impression that Nolan is way stronger than any other Viltrumite.
Really? I mean, like, it's clearly shown that he's, like, a high-ranking one. But at the same time, I mean, dispatch them like they're nothing. Like, I mean, I feel like we've been hearing time and time again, the Viltrumites are no easy mark. Like, they're powerful. And not only that, they sent 3 for Nolan.
That's true. They
sent 3v1.
They had to have been a little bit scared of Nolan to do that, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like, that says a lot, I feel, about his strength. The fact they didn't think 2 was enough. They didn't think a 2v1 was enough to take down Nolan.
I mean, they only sent 2 to go get Alan, right?
I think there was 3.
Or was 3. It just 1? Oh, okay. So
that was more of just, like, I'm pretty sure that was the same people that they had sent to Nolan. I think that they were just on their way.
Yeah, a little kill squad, Viltrumite kill squad out on the town.
I think they clearly knew that 1 would have been enough for Alan. I think they were just there because, like, oh, wait, they went to Alan before Nolan.
Yeah.
I mean, but they're probably all traveling together, right?
Yeah, I'm sure. I don't think we need to read too much into it.
No, I'm just thinking, because they're already in search of Nolan, so I can't imagine. Like, there's no way they sent 3 for Alan.
Yeah, Alan was probably just a pit stop on the way to Nolan. Yeah.
Yeah.
They're like, while you're out there, go take care of Alan.
Like, go smack that poor guy's ass up and pop his eye out.
Go get Seth Rogen.
Go get is he smoking right now? All right. To the next scene, we see, even though Eve claims she keeps a place in the city that was absolute cap, and she just crashes at the Guardian's hideout, but catches Kill Cannon trying to steal from them. Yeah. And then we cut back to Mark helping Nolan's new wife and kid, his little bro, escape through the caverns. And she's kind of telling him about Nolan and how he's been on Thraxa. And Mark basically learns about Nolan after he left Earth. He learns about how he actually really misses Mark and how he's talked about him a lot to her. And I feel like this kind of gives more evidence for that, like, Omni-Man's actually, he misses his family. He's starting to feel those, like, loving feelings, you know?
Or at the very least, he's starting to recognize that those feelings are there. You know, maybe he always had those warm feelings towards his family, but it took the events of last season to really make him realize how important they actually were to him.
Yeah. And then we see a Viltrumite named Lucan find Mark and starts beating the shit out of him. But right before he's about to get put out of commission, Nolan steps in and claps Lucan, absolutely destroys him, puts a stalactite through his stomach after basically disemboweling him. Yeah, so we do see the strength of Nolan there. I mean, he easily dispatches a single Viltrumite practically on his own. I mean, Mark lands, like, I think a punch or two on him, but he doesn't even draw blood.
And I believe this is the scene where Nolan sort of gives some tips to Mark on how to fight later. Like a Viltrumite.
That's later.
Oh, it's later? Okay.
Yeah. And then we cut back to Eve, who kind of almost loses the kill cannon because she gets a little cocky when fighting him. She almost lets these two people die. I don't even know if the two people died or not. She, like, got them out of the water after their car fell off the bridge into the water and, like, the first responders arrived. But, like, we don't ever see them, like, open their eyes or cough up the water. So I can't tell if they drowned or not.
Yeah, I can't tell either. Eve seems to be struggling with the whole superhero thing.
Yeah. And then we cut to Debbie, who's basically, like, disheveled, rightfully so, though, looking through old family photos of her and Mark and their whole family together. And Art comes over and he kind of helps comfort Debbie, you know, he's like, you know, I thought you were the strong one, you know, Nolan, he has superpowers, you know, doing his shit, he's got it easy, but you're the strong one. While Nolan is always away, you're taking care of Mark and raising a kid with good morals. I mean, look, you raised him so well that he was able to stand against his dad, even though he knew his dad was stronger than him.
Yeah, I mean, I'm so glad that this scene happened because Debbie really needed to hear that. She needed to hear that she did a good job raising Mark and that nothing that happened was her fault and that it's okay to sort of have those feelings of loss and grief. And yeah, she needed that reassurance and I'm glad she got it.
And then we cut to Donald, who sneaks into, like, a database room and finds the video of him exploding. And he's just like, what the fuck? He's like, huh? And then we abruptly cut back to Nolan and Mark, who, after they dispatch one of the Viltrumites, they come back to, like, the center of the Thraxan city. And they find a ton of Thraxans massacred. And Nolan is so confused by his emotions, his, like, the despair and anger and sadness he feels that he gets angry with Mark and himself. He's like, why do I feel this way? How is this better than feeling numb to it all, you know? And Mark's kind of like, you should have felt this way on Earth with all the people you killed there. But then the remaining two Viltrumites that came to get Nolan arrive and they start to fight, and Nolan's handling his pretty well, but Mark is getting his ass beat. He's getting his ass beat. Nolan is able to interrupt the fight between Mark and the other Viltrumite by throwing the one he's fighting into her, and Nolan kind of gives some harsh words to Mark to tell him that he needs to fight like an actual death battle it actually, you need a fight with the intent to kill or you're gonna die, because they're trying to kill you. And
yeah, they're not holding back, so you can't hold back.
Yeah, so Mark kind of taps in, you know, like he starts fighting very well, actually, in comparison to how he's fighting earlier. He starts getting the upper hand, but then right as he snatches defeat from the jaws of victory, almost, basically.
Yeah.
He has the Viltrumite on the edge, but he takes mercy on her, you know? I mean, that's Mark, though. He's such a heroic character. He refuses to kill. But because of that, she's able to beat him up, stab him in the stomach, and basically take Mark out of commission. But Nolan clutches, you know? He defeats both of them. He goes up to Mark and he's like, I think you'll be okay. Everything's going to be okay. But unfortunately, the guy who we thought they killed in the cave with the stalactite is somehow still alive, clutching his intestines with his, like, war skirt bundled up. And he, like, does, like, some, like, jumping somersault kick straight into Nolan's back. And it sounds like he, like, shattered his back.
Ugh. Yeah, that was nasty. This episode had a lot of blood and guts in it.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like a lot of the Invincible episodes do, though.
Oh, for sure. But this one was, like, particularly, I thought, a little bit...
Yeah.
A little bit above and beyond. But it was a crazy fight scene. And I don't understand the people who have been complaining about the animation in this show. I think it looks really good.
I like it. I mean, like, I get it's simple, but I think it's well done. It looks similar to the comics. I mean, it's definitely different, but it looks good.
Yeah, I mean, I've never been watching the show and thought to myself, oh god, I can't believe they animated it this way.
No, yeah, I mean, what I don't understand, though, is how long it's taken them to make these damn episodes.
You know, I'm wondering the same thing myself. Season 3 better be coming sooner than Season 2 did.
They best not have a darn hiatus again.
We can only hope.
Yeah. I mean, the show is definitely different from the comics in some aspects. There's some characters that are different, but honestly, I think it's still good. Like, it's different, but good. So, I like both versions.
I'm with you. I mean, I haven't read the comics. I would like to at some point. I've heard that they're pretty good. So it's on my list of things. Maybe this summer when I have a little bit more time, I'll get around to it.
Yeah. All right. In the next scene, we see Debbie talking to Cecil in her house. And she says she doesn't want the money that Cecil's been giving them anymore. And she wants him to redirect those funds towards Chicago. And that she feels that if they keep accepting this money, she'll feel that Mark owes Cecil something and that he's going to have to keep working for Cecil. And I think that's true to an extent. I don't think Mark is working with Cecil because he owes him something, but I do think that is, like, something that, knowing Cecil as a character, he might try and hold over Mark's head if that ever comes around. So I think it's good of Debbie to be doing that. I mean, I feel like it's unfair, though, at the same time, that she feels that she has to do that. I think she should be able to get that money and not feel guilty about that. She's going through a lot, you know?
Yeah, she should not have to feel guilty about it whatsoever.
I mean, I don't know. With every scene with her, you just see how strong and independent she is, I feel like. Every scene, her character develops so much. You see, like, she's really going through it, but she's still doing her best to be a good mom.
Yeah. She's just so compassionate, and you can see where Mark gets the majority of his personality from. Like, he's definitely his mother's son more than he is his father's.
Oh, for sure. All right, and then we cut back to Mark and Nolan on Thraxa, and we see the Viltrumites taking Nolan, and as they're taking Nolan, Nolan tells Mark to not forget the good he's done and tells Mark to read his books.
Little merch plug there.
Merch plug. Trying to sell a few last copies.
Gotta drum up some business before he goes out.
That's funny. All right. And then we cut to Eve knocking on her parents' door and going inside the house, but that's all we got. And we cut to Donald, who finds he's a cyborg by stabbing himself with a knife. And the knife bends, and you see, like, a little metal under his skin. I feel like that might be one of the worst. I don't know why in fiction, whenever people, like, find out they're a cyborg, they always, like, cut away their skin or something. Like what? Like, that's...
There's gotta be a better way. Like, walk through a metal detector.
Yeah, right? Like, surely we could just buy a metal detector or something, right? Like,
yeah, there had to be a better way.
An x-ray, like...
And we know Donald's got access to every high-tech machine in existence.
No, that's what I'm saying. And then we cut back to Mark, where a Viltrumite, not of the three that they fought, but General Krieg, a man who's missing his right eye, and it's like a robot eye, and he says to Mark that he's fought well in his first real battle and that he's worthy of Viltrumite blood, and tells him to continue his father's mission of conquering Earth for him. Mark says fuck you basically to him, and he punches him in the face and like mogs him and is like, nope, you're gonna do this anyways. Bye bye.
I refuse to let this podcast be taken over by brain rot.
And then we cut to the last scene in the episode where the Mauler who was just cloned poisons King Mauler, the Crispy Mauler.
Crispy Mauler, yeah.
Because he's sick of being a slave to him, basically.
Maulers are always beefing with each other.
Yeah, I don't know why they're trying to make each other their slaves, but...
You would think at some point they would just be like, all right, this isn't working. Let's just come to an agreement here.
Yeah.
So I thought when I first watched this that this was a very satisfying way to end the first half of season two. But the cliffhanger followed by the months-long break, ooh, that drove me a little bit crazy. I struggled with that. I was like, I don't know how long I can actually wait for this. I'm impatient. I need this soon.
I'm not gonna lie. Because of how weird the break was, I literally didn't realize the second half of the second season started airing again till like 5 days after episode 5 or something like that. Because like, what? How the fuck am I supposed to keep track of that bullshit? Like,
yeah. More than anything, it was just confusing.
Yeah, I mean, like, I'd rather them have just delayed the whole season by that hiatus and just been able to keep watching on a normal timeline.
Right. I feel like the worst case scenario would have been they get a head start on season 3 and delay season 2 a little bit, right?
I mean, like, with any show completed way before it starts airing, like, they didn't need the hiatus. Like, that was just a lie. Like, they were just lying when they were like, oh, we're actually still working things out. Like, no, you're not.
I don't know. I'm sure that they had a few things that they still had to work out. But in the end, it probably could have been a little bit closer together, or they could have delayed by a month or two just to have everything come out at once. I still thought that it was a great start to the season. It didn't take away from my enjoyment.
Extremely entertaining. I felt like the writing is so good. I mean, again, read the comics, so I knew most of what was gonna happen. But I mean, it's been a while since I've read the comics too, though. Because, like, I watched season one of Invincible, and then, when it aired, and then like immediate, because I think it aired in a binge format where it was like they just aired all of it at once, if I remember correctly.
I think so.
But then I read all of the comics, and like I haven't really touched anything Invincible since then. And then when season two was airing, like right before it aired, I rewatched all of season one, and then I watched season two. So it was like, my memory's like, to be fair, like a little bit fuzzy of the comics. Like, I know like the main things that happen, but like, yeah, like it was nice to see I feel like they're doing a really great job with this adaptation. Like, I don't think any of the things that they've changed has been for the worse. Like, I don't know, like some things maybe not for the better. Like, I would say it's like equally good. Some things probably for the better, but
I was gonna ask you, I had heard some things about the comics that some of the characters like Debbie and Rex aren't as fleshed out in the comics as they are in the show. Is that something that you noticed where you were like, oh, these characters are getting a lot more...
Yeah, I feel like Debbie does get a lot more love in the show, for sure, which is good. She, I mean, in the comics, like, she got love, but not, like, to the same degree, I would say, like, proportionally. Which, I mean, like, I'm really enjoying her arcs, so I think that's a good thing. A lot of the characters are, like, or not a lot, but a few of them are, like, gender or race swapped, which I don't really care about. It doesn't really change anything. Like, as long as the character, like, remains in their same role, like...
Right, yeah.
It doesn't matter to me.
Yeah, especially, like, people who care about that. Like, it's a cartoon.
No, yeah, people were, like, tweaking about, like, Amber being race swapped, and I was like, why? Like, it doesn't matter. Like, she's the same character. She's, like, the same, like, kind of cringe girlfriend.
Yeah, I mean, when you have...
She's honestly worse in the comics.
Yeah, like you said, they're fulfilling that same role.
Their role in the story, yeah.
Yeah, like, so I don't see any problem with that, and I don't really understand the folks who are out there beating their chests and screaming on Reddit about it.
Well, they're on Reddit for a reason, so...
That's very true.
But yeah, I mean, I think overall, like, besides, like, the airing times, other than that, I mean, I really enjoyed the season. I think Amazon's doing a great job, and I think Amazon has been doing a great job recently with a lot of their shows.
Yeah, I mean, Invincible, The Boys, Fallout, the list can go on and on. They're just, Amazon really is a home for some fantastic shows. Truly. I don't know if that's a symptom of them giving the people who are working for them more creative freedom than a lot of other studios are, or if it's the bigger budget. I don't know what it is, but whatever's going on over at Amazon, it seems to be working. I'm liking it.
I mean, it must be, right? Because, like, I know that every time Netflix does something, it's like poo-poo, pee-pee. And then, like, one in, like, 100 Netflix shows will be, like, actually enjoyable.
For every Witcher, for every 100 Witchers, there's one Stranger Things season one. Which, I won't get into Stranger Things. I'm not a big fan of that either. But it's a lot more critically acclaimed than other shows on Netflix are.
Yeah.
Do we want to wrap up the episode, or do you have any final thoughts before we get into the end here?
No, I think that's about it. Just remember, our next episode is going to be covering episodes 5 through 8. So if you want to watch that next episode without being spoiled, please make sure to finish season 2 of Invincible if you have not already.
And it's going to be our last episode, because this is a little two-parter series for Invincible. It'll be our last episode, so make sure if you have feedback on Invincible, send it into us, and Chase will tell you a little bit about how to get us that feedback.
Yeah, there are a few ways to contact us or send us feedback. First being email, which is fallout@thelorehounds.com. Also, we have a channel set up for Radioactive Ramblings within the Lorehounds Discord server, where you can send us a message or chat about the show. And finally, you can use the contact form or leave us a voicemail by going to thelorehounds.com. And last off, please leave us a rating on Apple Podcasts. It helps other listeners like you find us.
And as a final note, we are proud affiliates of the Barovian Podcasting Network, and let me tell you a little bit about some of our other affiliates in the network. Rings and Rituals, if you are a big Lorehounds fan, you will recognize Marilyn Arpukila. She's joined by Dr. Sarah Brown of Signum University, and in this podcast, they analyze Season 1 of The Rings of Power through the lens of ritual, while also looking at the bigger Tolkien legendarium. I've been listening to this one, and it is fantastic. Give them a listen. They're doing a great job on this. And Woolshift Dust, which is hosted by Alicia. She is covering Beacon 23 Season 2. She has an interview out already with author Hugh Howie. And also from Alicia, she's just started doing a Star Wars timeline podcast, actually. So go and give that a listen, too. She's got the first episode of that out now, and it's shaping up to be a really interesting podcast. I'm loving it so far. Back from their hiatus is Properly Howard Movie Reviews, a show where two old friends, a academic and a stand-up comic, Anthony and Steve, review movies on a scale of better or worse worse than a Ron Howard movie. They have a new season theme, which is Felonies and Fugazis. Check out those episodes at Properly Howard. And last but certainly not least, our parent podcast, The Lorehounds, who has just finished up their coverage of Shogun on FX, and they've just gone into their season recap of House of the Dragon. They're going to be going in and doing two episodes at a time, and that'll take them up to the release of the new season. They've got a Patreon exclusive benefit for people, which is going to be their House of the Dragon show guide, which I helped them do a little bit with. Me, Brian8063, and John all got together, and John really went to town on this thing. He did a great job making this this show guide really fantastic. So go give their coverage a listen and consider subscribing for that. And I think that's all for today, and we look forward to seeing you all in the next episode of Radioactive Ramblings.
A new Star Wars journey begins in the place all good journeys begin. At, well, the beginning. This Star Wars Day, I'm excited to introduce the new Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast, where we will piece together the complete story of that galaxy far, far away, in timeline order, from the dawn of the Jedi through the great unknown following the sequel trilogy. This is a podcast for both Star Wars superfans and complete newbies. Listen to the short intro episode now to hear how it works and what to expect over the coming weeks as we set the stage for the new television series The Acolyte, which we will be covering with weekly breakdowns. Subscribe to the Star Wars Canon Timeline podcast wherever you listen to take part in one of the most epic and expansive stories ever told, following all the twists and turns from start to finish. May the 4th be with you all month and beyond.